translucent and kept fading in and out of my field of vision. But yes, from what I could see, he definitely looked like Mason. His features were washed out, making his fair skin look whiter than I recalled. His reddish hair now appeared as a faint, watery orange. I could barely even see his freckles. He was wearing exactly what I'd last seen him in, jeans and a yellow fleece jacket. The edge of a green sweater peeped out from underneath the coat's hem. Those colors, too, were all softened. He looked like a photograph that someone had left out in the sun, causing it to fade. A very, very faint glow seemed to outline his features. The part that struck me the most, aside from the fact that he was supposed to be dead, was the look on his face. It was sad. So, so sad. Looking into his eyes, I felt my heart break. All the memories of what had taken place just a few weeks ago came rushing back to me. I saw it all again. His body falling, the cruel look on the Strigoi faces. A lump formed in my throat. I stood there, frozen, stunned, and unable to move. He studied me, too, his expression never changing. Sad. Grim. Serious. He opened his mouth like he might speak, and then closed it. Several more heavy moments hung between us, and then he lifted his hand and extended it toward me. Something in that motion snapped me out of my daze. No, this could not be happening. I wasn't seeing this. Mason was dead. I'd seen him die. I'd held his body. His fingers moved slightly, like he was beckoning, and I panicked. Backing up a few steps, I put distance between us and waited to see what would happen. He didn't follow. He simply stood there, hand still in the air. My heart lurched, and I turned and ran. When I'd almost reached the door, I stopped and glanced back, letting my ragged breathing calm down. The clearing he'd stood in was completely empty. I made it up to my room and slammed the door behind me, hands shaking. I sank onto my bed and replayed what had just happened. What the hell? That had not been real. No way. Impossible. Mason was dead. And everyone knows the dead don't come back. Well, yeah, I had come back, but that was a different situation. Clearly, I'd imagined this. That was it. It had to be. I was overtired and still reeling from Lyssa and Christian, not to mention that Viktor Dashkov news. Probably the cold had frozen part of my brain, too. Yes, the more I thought about it, the more I decided there had to be 100 explanations for what had just happened. Yet, no matter how often I told myself that, I couldn't fall back asleep. I lay in my bed, covers pulled to my chin as I tried to banish that haunting image from my mind. I couldn't. All I could see were those sad, sad eyes. Those eyes that seemed to say, "Rose, why did you let this happen to me?" I squeezed my eyes shut, trying not to think about him. Since Mason's funeral, I'd been working so hard to go on and act like I was strong. But the truth was, I was nowhere near being over his death. I tortured myself day after day with what-if questions. What if I'd been faster and stronger during the Strigoi fight? What if I hadn't told him where the Strigoi were in the first place? And what if I'd simply been able to return his love? Any of those could have kept him alive, but none of them had happened, and it was all my fault. "I imagined it," I whispered out loud into the darkness of my room. I had to have imagined it. Mason already haunted my dreams. I didn't need to see him when I was awake, too. It wasn't him. It couldn't have been him, because the only way it could have been was, well, that was something I didn't want to think about. Because while I believed in vampires and magic and psychic powers, I most certainly did not believe in ghosts. I apparently didn't believe in sleep either, because I didn't get much of it that night. I tossed and turned, unable to quiet my racing mind. I eventually did drift off, but it seemed like my alarm went off so soon after that I could have hardly slept for more than a few minutes. Among humans, the light of day tends to chase off nightmares and fear. I had no such daylight. I awoke to increasing darkness. But just being out with real and living people had nearly the same effect, and as I went to breakfast and my morning practice, I found that what I'd seen last night, or what I thought I'd seen last night, was growing fainter and fainter in my memory. The weirdness of that encounter was also being replaced by something else. Excitement. This was it, the big day, the start of our field experience. For the next 6 weeks, I wouldn't have any classes. I'd get to spend my days hanging out with Lissa, and the most I'd have to do was write a daily field report that was only about a half page long. Easy. And yeah, of course I'd be on guard duty, but I wasn't concerned. That was second nature to me. She and I had lived among humans for 2 years, and I'd protected her the whole time. Before that, when I'd been a freshman, I'd seen the kind of tests the adult guardians planned for novices during this phase. The ordeals were tricky, absolutely. A novice had to be on watch and not slack, and be ready to defend an attack if necessary. None of that worried me, though. Lissa and I had been away from the school our sophomore and junior years, and I'd fallen behind then. Thanks to my extra practices with Dimitri, I'd quickly caught up and was now one of the best in my class. Hey, Rose. Eddie Castile caught up to me as I walked into the gym where our field experience orientation would kick off. For a brief moment, looking at Eddie, my heart sank. Suddenly, it was like I was out in the quad again with Mason, staring at his sorrowful face. Eddie, along with Lissa's boyfriend Christian and a Maroi named Maya, had been with our group when we'd been captured by Strigoi. Eddie hadn't died, obviously, but he'd come very close to it. The Strigoi who'd held us had used him as food, feeding from him throughout our capture in an effort to tease the Maroi and scare the Dampiers. It had worked. I'd been terrified. Poor Eddie had been unconscious for most of the ordeal, thanks to blood loss and the endorphins that came from a vampire's bite. He'd been Mason's best friend, and nearly as funny and lighthearted. But since we'd escaped, Eddie had changed, just like I had. He was still quick to smile and laugh, but there was a grimness to him now, a dark and serious look in his eyes that was always on guard for the worst to happen. That was understandable, of course. He pretty much had seen the worst happen. Just like with Mason's death, I held myself responsible for this transformation in Eddie and for what he'd suffered at the hands of the Strigoi. That may not have been fair to me, but I couldn't help it. I felt like I owed him now, like I needed to protect him or make things up to him somehow. And that was kind of funny because I think Eddie was trying to protect me. He wasn't stalking me or anything, but I'd noticed him keeping an eye on me. I think after what had happened, he felt he owed it to Mason to watch over his girlfriend. I never bothered to tell Eddie that I hadn't been Mason's girlfriend, not in the real sense of the word, just as I never rebuked Eddie for his big brother behavior. I could certainly take care of myself, but whenever I heard him warning other guys away from me, pointing out that I wasn't ready to date anyone yet, I saw no point in interfering. It was all true. I wasn't ready to date. Eddie gave me a lopsided smile that added a little boy type of cuteness to his long face. Are you excited? Hell yeah, I said. Our classmates were filling in bleachers on one side of the gym, and we found a clear spot near the middle. It's going to be like a vacation, me and Lissa together for 6 weeks. As frustrating as our bond was sometimes, it nonetheless made me her ideal guardian. I always knew where she was and what was happening to her. Once we graduated and were out in the world, I'd be assigned to her officially. He turned thoughtful. Yeah, I guess you don't have to worry as much. You know your assignment when you graduate. The rest of us aren't so lucky. You got your sights set on some royal? I teased. Well, it doesn't matter. Most guardians are assigned to royals lately anyway. That was true. Dampiers, half-vampires like me, were in short supply, and royals usually got first pick of guardians. There was a time in the past when more Moroi, royal and non-royal alike, would have gotten guardians, and novices like us would have competed fiercely to get assigned to someone important. Now, it was almost a given that every guardian would work for a royal family. There weren't enough of us to go around, and less influential families were on their own. Still, I said, I guess it's a question of which royal you get, right? I mean, some are total snobs, but lots of them are cool. Get someone really rich and powerful, and you could be living at the royal court or traveling to exotic places. That last part appealed to me a lot, and I often had fantasies of Lyssa and me traveling the world. Yep, agreed Eddie. He nodded toward a few guys in the front row. You wouldn't believe the way those three have been sucking up to some of the Ivashkovs and Seltskis. It won't affect their assignments here, of course, but you can tell they're already trying to set things up after graduation. Well, the field experience can't affect that. How we're rated on this will go into our records. Eddie nodded again and started to say something when a loud, clear, feminine voice cut through the murmur of our conversation. We both looked up. While we'd been talking, our instructors had gathered in front of the bleachers and now stood facing us in an impressive line. Dimitri was among them, dark and imposing and irresistible. Alberta was trying to call us to attention. The crowd fell silent. All right, she began. Alberta was in her 50s, wiry and tough. Seeing her reminded me of the conversation she and Dimitri had had last night, but I filed that away for later. Victor Dashkov was not going to ruin this moment. You all know why you're here. We'd become so quiet, so tense and excited, that her voice now rang through the gym. This is the most important day of your education before you take your final trials. Today, you will find out which Moroi you've been placed with. Last week, you were given a booklet with the full details of how the next 6 weeks will play out. I trust you've all read it by now. I had, actually. I'd probably never read anything so thoroughly in my life. Just to recap, Guardian Alto will highlight the main rules of this exercise. She handed a clipboard to Guardian Stan Alto. He was one of my least favorite instructors. But after Mason's death, some of the tension between us had lightened. We understood each other better now.
Here we go, said Stan gruffly. You'll be on duty 6 days a week. This is actually a treat for you guys. In the real world, you're usually working every day. You will accompany your Moroi everywhere. To class, to their dorms, to their feedings. Everything. It's up to you to figure out how you fit into their lives. Some Moroi interact with their guardians just like friends. Some Moroi prefer you to be more of an invisible ghost who doesn't talk to them.
Did he have to use the word ghost?
Every situation is different, and you two will have to find a way to work it out to best ensure their safety. Attacks may come at any time, anywhere, and we'll be dressed in all black when it happens. You should always be on your guard. Remember, even though you'll obviously know it's us doing the attacking and not real Strigoi, you should respond as though your lives are in terrible, immediate danger. Don't be afraid of hurting us. Some of you, I'm sure, won't have any qualms about getting us back for past grievances.
Students in the crowd giggled at this.
But some of you may feel like you have to hold back, for fear of getting in trouble. Don't. You'll get in more trouble if you do hold back. Don't worry. We can take it.
He flipped to the next page of his clipboard.
You will be on duty 24 hours a day for your 6-day cycles, but you may sleep during daylight when your Moroi does. Just be aware that although Strigoi attacks are rare in daylight, they aren't impossible indoors, and you will not necessarily be safe during these times.
Stan read over a few more technicalities, and I found myself tuning them out. I knew this stuff. We all did. Glancing around, I could see I wasn't alone in my impatience. Excitement and apprehension crackled in the crowd. Hands were clenched. Eyes were wide. We all wanted our assignments. We all wanted this to begin. When Stan finished, he handed the clipboard to Alberta.
"Okay," she said.
"I'm going to call out your names one by one and announce who you're paired with. At that time, come down here to the floor, and Guardian Chase will give you a packet containing information about your Moroi's schedule, past, etc."
We all straightened up as she leafed through her papers. Students whispered. Beside me, Eddie exhaled heavily. "Oh, man, I hope I get someone good," he muttered. "I don't want to be miserable for the next 6 weeks."
I squeezed his arm reassuringly. "You will," I whispered back. "Get someone good, I mean. Not be miserable."
"Ryan Islesworth?"
Alberta announced clearly. Eddie flinched, and I instantly knew why. Before, Mason Ashford had always been the first one called on any class lists. That would never happen again.
"You are assigned to Camille Conta."
"Damn,"
muttered someone behind us, who apparently had been hoping to get Camille. Ryan was one of the stuck-ups in the front row, and he grinned broadly as he walked over to take his packet. The Contas were an up-and-coming royal family. It was rumored that one of their members was a candidate for when the Moroi Queen eventually named her heirs. Plus, Camille was pretty cute. Following her around wouldn't be too hard for any guy. Ryan, walking with a swagger, seemed very pleased with himself.
"Dean Barnes," she said next. "You have Jesse Zeklos."
"Ugh," Eddie and I both said together. If I'd been assigned to Jesse, he would have needed an extra person to protect him. From me.
Alberta kept reading names, and I noticed Eddie was sweating. "Please, please let me get someone good," he muttered.
"You will," I said. "You will."
"Edison Castile," Alberta announced.
He gulped.
"Vasilisa Dragomir."
Eddie and I both froze for the space of a heartbeat, and then duty made him stand up and head toward the floor. As he stepped down the bleachers, he shot me a quick, panicked look over his shoulder. His expression seemed to say, "I don't know, I don't know." That made two of us. The world around me slowed to a blur. Alberta kept calling names, but I didn't hear any of them. What was going on? Clearly someone had made a mistake. Lissa was my assignment. She had to be. I was going to be her guardian when we graduated. This made no sense. Heart racing, I watched Eddie walk over to Guardian Chase and get his packet and practice stake. He glanced down at the papers immediately, and I suspected he was double-checking the name, certain there was a mix-up. The expression on his face when he looked up told me that it was Lissa's name he'd found. I took a deep breath. Okay. No need to panic just yet. Someone had made a clerical error here, one that could be fixed. In fact, they'd have to fix it soon. When they got to me and read Lissa's name again, they were going to realize they'd double-booked one of the Moroi. They'd straighten it out and give Eddie someone else. After all, there were plenty of Moroi to go around. They outnumbered Dampiers at the school.
Rosemary Hathaway.
I tensed.
Christian Ozera.
I simply stared at Alberta, unable to move or respond. No. She had not just said what I thought. A few people, noticing my lack of movement, glanced back at me. But I was dumbstruck. This wasn't happening. My Mason delusion from last night seemed more real than this. A few moments later, Alberta also realized I wasn't moving. She looked up from her clipboard with annoyance, scanning the crowd.
Rose Hathaway?
Someone elbowed me, like maybe I didn't recognize my own name. Swallowing, I stood and walked down the bleachers, robot-like. There was a mistake. There had to be a mistake. I headed toward Guardian Chase, feeling like a puppet that someone else was controlling. He handed me a packet and a practice stake meant to kill the adult guardians with, and I stepped out of the way for the next person. Disbelieving, I read the words on the packet's cover 3 times. Christian O'Zara. Flipping it open, I saw his life spread out before me. A current picture, his class schedule, his family tree, his bio. It even went into detail about his parents' tragic history, how they'd chosen to become Strigoi and had murdered several people before finally being hunted down and killed. Our directions at this point had been to read through our dossiers, pack a bag, and then meet up with our Moroi at lunch. As more names were called, many of my classmates lingered around the gym, talking to their friends and showing off their packets. I hovered near one group, discreetly waiting for a chance to talk to Alberta and Dimitri. It was a sign of my newly developing patience that I didn't walk right up to them then and there and demand answers. Believe me, I wanted to. Instead, I let them go through their list, but it felt like forever. Honestly, how long did it take to read a bunch of names? When the last novice had been assigned his Moroi, Stan shouted above the din for us to move on to the next stage of the assignment and tried to herd out my classmates. I cut through the crowd and stalked up to Dimitri and Alberta, who blessedly were standing with each other. They were chatting about something administrative and didn't notice me right away. When they did glance at me, I held up my packet and pointed, "What's this?" Alberta's face looked blank and confused. Something in Dimitri's told me he'd been expecting this. "It's your assignment, Miss Hathaway," Alberta said.
"No,"
I said through gritted teeth.
"It's not. This is somebody else's assignment."
"The assignments in your field experience aren't optional," she told me sternly. "Just as your assignments in the real world won't be. You can't pick who you protect based on whim and mood. Not here. And certainly not after graduation."
"But after graduation, I'm going to be Lissa's guardian," I exclaimed. "Everyone knows that. I'm supposed to have her for this thing."
"I know it's an accepted idea that you'll be together after graduation, but I do not recall any mandatory rulings that say you're supposed to have her or anyone here at school. You take who you're assigned."
"Christian?"
I threw my packet on the floor.
"You're out of your mind if you think I'm guarding him."
"Rose," snapped Dimitri, joining the conversation at last. His voice was so hard and so sharp that I flinched and forgot what I was saying for half a second.
"You're out of line. You do not speak to your instructors like that."
I hated being chastised by anyone. I especially hated being chastised by him. And I especially hated being chastised by him when he was right. But I couldn't help it. I was too angry, and the lack of sleep was taking its toll. My nerves felt raw and strained, and suddenly, little things seemed difficult to bear, and big things like this, impossible to bear.
"Sorry," I said with great reluctance, "but this is stupid, nearly as stupid as not bringing us to Victor Dashkov's trial."
Alberta blinked in surprise.
"How did you know?"
"Never mind. We'll deal with that later. For now, this is your assignment, and you need to do it." Eddie suddenly spoke up beside me, his voice filled with apprehension. I'd lost track of him earlier.
"Look, I don't mind. We can switch." Alberta turned her stony gaze from me to him.
No, you certainly cannot. Vasilisa Dragomir is your assignment.
She looked back at me.
And Christian Ozera is yours. End of discussion.
This is stupid, I repeated. Why should I waste my time with Christian? Liss is the one I'm going to be with when I graduate. It seems like if you want me to be able to do a good job, you should have me practice with her.
You will do a good job with her, said Dimitri, because you know her, and you have your bond. But somewhere, someday, you could end up with a different Moroi. You need to learn how to guard someone with whom you have absolutely no experience.
I have experience with Christian, I grumbled. That's the problem. I hate him. Okay, that was a huge exaggeration. Christian annoyed me, true, but I didn't really hate him. As I'd said, working together against the Strigoi had changed a lot of things. Again, I felt like my lack of sleep and general irritability were cranking up the magnitude of everything.
So much the better, said Alberta. Not everyone you protect will be your friend. Not everyone you protect will be someone you like. You need to learn this.
I need to learn how to fight Strigoi, I said. I've learned that in class.
I fixed them with a sharp look, ready to play my trump card.
And I've done it in person.
There's more to this job than the technicalities, Miss Hathaway. There's a whole personal aspect, a bedside manner, if you will, that we don't touch on much in class. We teach you how to deal with the Strigoi. You need to learn how to deal with the Moroi yourselves. And you, in particular, need to deal with someone who has not been your best friend for years. You also need to learn what it's like to work with someone when you can't instantly sense that they're in danger, added Dimitri.
Right, agreed Alberta. That's a handicap.
If you want to be a good guardian, if you want to be an excellent guardian, then you need to do as we say.
I opened my mouth to fight this, to argue that having someone I was so close to would train me up faster and make me a better guardian for any other Moroi. Dimitri cut me off.
Working with another Moroi will also help keep Lyssa alive, he said. That shut me down. It was pretty much the only thing that could have, and damn him, he knew it.
What do you mean? I asked.
Lyssa's got a handicap, too. You. If she never has a chance to learn what it's like to be guarded by someone without a psychic connection, she could be at a greater risk if attacked. Guarding someone is really a two-person relationship. This assignment, for your field experience, is as much for her as for you.
I stayed silent as I processed his words. They almost made sense.
And, Alberta added, it's the only assignment you're going to get. If you don't take it, then you opt out of the field experience.
Opt out? Was she crazy? It wasn't like a class I could sit out from for one day. If I didn't do my field experience, I didn't graduate. I wanted to explode about unfairness, but Dimitri stopped me without saying a word. The constant, calm look in his dark eyes held me back, encouraging me to accept this gracefully, or as close as I could manage. Reluctantly, I picked up the packet. Fine, I said icily. I'll do this, but I want it noted that I'm doing this against my will.
I think we already figured that out, Miss Hathaway, remarked Alberta dryly.
Whatever. I still think it's a horrible idea, and you eventually will, too.
I turned and stormed off across the gym before any of them could respond. In doing so, I fully realized what a bitchy little brat I sounded like. But if they'd just endured their best friend's sex life, seen a ghost, and hardly gotten any sleep, they'd have been bitchy, too. Plus, I was about to spend 6 weeks with Christian Ozera. He was sarcastic,
difficult, and made jokes about everything. Actually, he was a lot like me. It was going to be a long 6 weeks. Chapter 3.
Why so glum, little Dampier?
I was heading across the quad toward the commons when I detected a scent of clove cigarettes. I sighed. Adrian, you are the last person I want to see right now. Adrian Ivashkov hurried up beside me, blowing a cloud of smoke into the air that of course drifted right toward me. I waved it off and made a great show of exaggerated coughing. Adrian was a Royal Maroi we'd acquired on our recent ski trip. He was a few years older than me and had come back to St. Vladimir's to work on learning spirit with Lyssa. So far, he was the only other spirit user we knew of. He was arrogant and spoiled and spent a lot of his time indulging in cigarettes, alcohol, and women. He also had a crush on me, or at least wanted to get me into bed.
"Apparently," he said. "I've hardly seen you at all since we got back. If I didn't know better, I'd say you were avoiding me."
"I am avoiding you." He exhaled loudly and raked a hand through the sable-brown hair he always kept stylishly messy.
"Look, Rose, you don't have to keep up with the hard-to-get thing. You've already got me."
Adrian knew perfectly well I wasn't playing hard-to-get, but he always took a particular delight in teasing me. "I'm not really in the mood for your so-called charm today."
"What happened then? You're stomping through every puddle you can find and look like you're going to punch the first person you see."
"Why are you hanging around then? Aren't you worried about getting hit?"
"Aw, you'd never hurt me. My face is too pretty."
"Not pretty enough to make up for the gross carcinogenic smoke blowing in my face. How can you do that? Smoking's not allowed on campus. Abby Badika got 2 weeks detention when she got caught."
"I'm above the rules, Rose. I'm neither student nor staff. Merely a free spirit wandering your fair school as I will."
"Maybe you should go do some wandering now."
"You want to get rid of me? You tell me what's going on."
There was no avoiding it. Besides, he'd know soon enough. Everyone would know. "I got assigned to Christian for my field experience." There was a pause, and then Adrian burst out laughing.
"Wow, now I understand. In light of that, you actually seem remarkably calm."
"I was supposed to have Lyssa," I growled. "I can't believe they did this to me."
"Why did they do it? Is there some chance you might not be with her when you graduate?"
"No. They just all seem to think this is going to help me train better now. Dimitri and I will still be her real guardians later." Adrian gave me a sidelong glance.
"Oh, I'm sure that'll be quite the hardship for you."
It had to be one of the weirdest things in the universe that Lyssa had never come close to suspecting my feelings for Dimitri, but that Adrian had figured it out. "Like I said, your commentary isn't appreciated today."
He apparently didn't agree. I had a suspicious feeling that he'd been drinking already, and it was barely even lunchtime. "What's the problem? Christian'll be with Lyssa all the time anyway."
Adrian had a point. Not that I'd have admitted it. Then, in that short attention span way of his, he switched subjects just as we neared the building.
"Have I mentioned your aura to you?"
he asked suddenly. There was a strange note to his voice. Hesitant. Curious. It was very uncharacteristic. Everything he usually said was mocking. "I don't know. Yeah, once. You said it was dark or something. Why?" Auras were fields of light that surrounded every person. Their colors and brightness were allegedly linked to a person's personality and energy. Only spirit users could see them. Adrian had been doing it for as long as he could remember, but Lyssa was still learning.
"Hard to explain. Maybe it's nothing."
He came to a stop near the door and inhaled deeply on his cigarette. He went out of his way to blow a cloud of smoke away from me, but the wind carried it back.
Auras are strange. They ebb and flow and change color and brightness. Some are vivid, some are pale. Every once in a while, someone's will settle and burn with such a pure color that you can...
He tipped his head back, staring into the sky. I recognized the signs of that weird, unhinged state he sometimes fell into.
You can instantly grasp what it means.
It's like seeing into their soul. I smiled.
But you haven't figured mine out, huh? Or what any of these colors mean?
He shrugged.
I'm figuring it out. You talk to enough people, you get a feel for what they're like, and then start to see the same kinds of people with the same kinds of colors. After a while, the colors start to mean something.
What's mine look like right now?
He glanced over at me.
I can't quite get a fix on it today.
I knew it. You've been drinking.
Substances like alcohol or certain medications numbed spirit's effects.
Just enough to chase the chill away. I can guess what your aura's like, though. It's usually like the others, sort of those swirling colors. It's just kind of edged in darkness, like you've always got a shadow following you.
Something in his voice made me shiver. Although I'd heard him and Lissa talk about auras a lot, I'd never really thought of them as anything I needed to worry about. They were more like some kind of stage trick, a cool thing with little substance.
That's so cheerful, I said. You ever think about motivational speaking?
His scattered look faded, and his normal mirth returned.
Don't worry, little Dampier. You might be surrounded by clouds, but you'll always be like sunshine to me.
I rolled my eyes. He dropped his cigarette onto the sidewalk and put it out with his foot.
Gotta go.
See you later. He swept me a gallant bow and started walking away toward guest housing.
You just littered,
I yelled.
Above the rules, Rose,
he called back.
Above the rules.
Shaking my head, I picked up the now cold cigarette butt and took it to a garbage can that was outside the building. When I entered, the warmth inside was a welcome change as I shook off the slush on my boots. Down in the cafeteria, I found lunch wrapping up for the afternoon. Here, Dampier sat side by side with Maroy, providing a study in contrasts. Dampiers with our half-human blood were bigger, though not taller, and more solidly built. The girl novices were curvier than the ultra-slim Maroy girls, the boy novices far more muscular than their vampire counterparts. The Maroy complexions were pale and delicate, like porcelain, while ours were tanned from being outside in the sun so much. Lissa sat at a table by herself, looking serene and angelic in a white sweater. Her pale blonde hair cascaded over her shoulders. She glanced up at my approach, and welcoming feelings flowed to me through our bond. She grinned.
Oh, look at your face. It's true, isn't it? You really are assigned to Christian.
I glared.
Would it kill you to be a little less miserable?
She gave me a censuring yet amused look as she licked the last of her strawberry yogurt off her spoon.
I mean, he's my boyfriend after all. I hang out with him all the time. It's not that bad.
You have the patience of a saint, I grumbled, slouching into a chair. And besides, you don't hang out with him 24/7.
Neither will you. It's only 24/6.
Same difference. It might as well be 24/10.
She frowned.
That doesn't make any sense.
I waved off my idiotic remark and stared blankly around the lunchroom. The room was buzzing with news of the impending field exercise, which would kick off as soon as lunch ended. Camille's best friend had gotten assigned to Ryan's best friend, and the four of them huddled gleefully together, looking as though they were about to embark on a 6-week double date. At least someone would enjoy all this. I sighed. Christian, my soon-to-be charge, was off with the feeders, humans who willingly donated blood to Maroy.
Through our bond, I sensed Lissa wanted to tell me something. She was holding off because she was worried about my bad mood and wanted to make sure I got enough support. I smiled.
Stop worrying about me. What's up?
She smiled back, her pink glossed lips hiding her fangs. I got permission.
Permission for...
The answer flitted from her mind faster than she could have voiced it.
What?
I exclaimed.
You're going to stop your meds?
Spirit was an amazing power, one whose cool abilities we were just starting to figure out. It had a very nasty side effect, however. It could lead to depression and insanity. Part of the reason Adrian indulged in drinking so much, aside from his party nature, was to numb himself against these side effects. Lissa had a much healthier way of doing it. She took antidepressants, which completely cut her off from the magic altogether. She hated not being able to work with Spirit anymore, but that was an acceptable trade-off for not going crazy. Well, I thought it was. She apparently disagreed if she was considering this insane experiment. I knew she'd been wanting to try the magic again, but I hadn't really thought she'd go through with it, or that anyone would let her.
I have to check in with Miss Carmack every day and regularly talk to a counselor.
Lissa made a face at this last part, but her overall feelings were still quite upbeat.
I can't wait to see what I can do with Adrian.
Adrian's a bad influence.
He didn't make me do this, Rose. I chose it.
When I didn't answer, she lightly touched my arm.
Hey, listen, don't worry. I've been so much better, and lots of people are going to have my back.
Everyone except me, I told her wistfully. Across the room, Christian entered through a set of double doors and approached us. The clock read 5 minutes until the end of lunch.
Oh, man, the 0 hour is almost here.
Christian pulled up a chair at our table and flipped it backwards, letting his chin rest on its slatted back. He brushed his black hair away from his blue eyes and gave us a smug smile. I felt Lissa's heart lighten at his presence.
I can't wait until this show gets on the road, he said. You and me are going to have so much fun, Rose, picking out curtains, doing each other's hair, telling ghost stories.
The reference to ghost stories hit a little closer to home than I was comfortable with. Not that choosing curtains or brushing Christian's hair was much more appealing. I shook my head in exasperation and stood up.
I'll leave you two alone for your last few private moments.
They laughed. I walked over to the lunch line, hoping to find some leftover donuts from breakfast. So far, I could see croissants, quiche, and poached pears. It must have been highbrow day at the cafeteria. Was deep-fried dough really too much to ask for? Eddie stood in front of me. His face turned apologetic as soon as he saw me.
Rose, I'm really sorry.
I put a hand up to stop him.
Don't worry. It's not your fault. Just promise me you'll do a good job protecting her.
It was a silly statement, since she was in no real danger, but I could never really stop worrying about her, particularly in light of this new development with her medication. Eddie stayed serious, apparently not thinking my request was silly at all. He was one of the few who knew about Lissa's abilities and their downsides, which was probably why he'd selected to guard her. I won't let anything happen to her. I mean it. I couldn't help a smile, in spite of my glum mood. His experiences with the Strigoi made him take all of this more seriously than almost any other novice. Aside from me, he was probably the best choice to guard her.
Rose, is it true you punched Guardian Petrov?
I turned and looked into the faces of two Moroi, Jesse Zeklos and Ralph Sarkozy. They just stepped in line behind Eddie and me and looked more self-satisfied and annoying than usual. Jesse was all bronzed good looks and quick thinking. Ralph was his slightly less attractive and slightly less intelligent sidekick. They were quite possibly the two people I hated most at this school,
mainly due to some nasty rumors they'd spread about me doing some very explicit things with them. It was Mason's strong-arming that had forced them to tell the truth to the school, and I don't think they'd ever forgiven me for that.
Punch Alberta? Hardly.
I started to turn around, but Ralph kept talking.
We heard you threw a big hissy fit in the gym when you found out who you were with.
Hissy fit? What are you, 60? All I did was...
I paused and carefully chose my words.
Register my opinion.
Well, said Jesse, I suppose if anyone's going to keep an eye on that Strigoi wannabe, it might as well be you. You're the biggest badass around here.
The grudging tone in his voice made it sound like he was complimenting me. I didn't see it that way at all. Before he could utter another word, I was standing right in front of him, with barely any space between us. In what I considered a true sign of discipline, I didn't put my hand around his throat. His eyes widened in surprise.
Christian has nothing to do with any Strigoi, I said in a low voice.
His parents
are his parents, and he's Christian. Don't confuse them.
Jesse had been on the wrong side of my anger before. He was clearly remembering that, and his fear warred with his desire to trash-talk Christian in front of me. Surprisingly, the latter won out.
Earlier, you act like being with him was the end of the world, and now you're defending him? You know how he is. He breaks rules all the time. Are you saying you seriously don't believe there's any chance at all he might turn Strigoi like his parents?
None, I said. Absolutely none. Christian's more willing to take a stand against Strigoi than probably any other Maroi here.
Jesse's eyes flicked curiously toward Ralph before returning to me.
He even helped me fight against those ones in Spokane. There is no chance of him ever. Ever turning Strigoi.
I racked my brain, trying to recall who had been assigned to Jesse for the field experience.
And if I hear you spreading that crap around, Dean isn't going to be able to save you from me.
Or me,
added Eddie, who had come to stand right beside me. Jesse swallowed and took a step back.
You're such a liar. You can't lay a hand on me. If you get suspended now, you'll never graduate.
He was right, of course, but I smiled anyway.
Might be worth it. We'll have to see, huh?
It was at that point that Jesse and Ralph decided they didn't want anything from the lunch line after all. They stalked off, and I heard something that sounded suspiciously like crazy bitch.
Jerks,
I muttered. Then I brightened.
Oh, hey, donuts.
I got a chocolate glazed, and then Eddie and I hurried off to find our Maroi to get to class. He grinned at me.
If I didn't know any better, I'd say you just offended Christian's honor. Isn't he a pain in the ass?
Yes, I said, licking icing off my fingers. He is, but for the next 6 weeks, he's my pain in the ass.
Chapter 4
It began.
At first, things weren't too different from any other day. Dampier's and Maroi attended separate classes in the first half of the school day, then joined up after lunch. Christian had most of the same afternoon classes I'd had last semester, so it was almost like following my own schedule again. The difference was that I was no longer a student in these classes. I didn't sit at a desk or have to do any of the work. I was also a lot more uncomfortable, since I had to stand at the back of the room the entire time, along with the other novices who were guarding Maroi. Outside the school, this was what it was usually like. Maroi came first. Guardians were shadows. There was a strong temptation to talk to our fellow novices, particularly during times when the Maroi were working on their own and talking amongst themselves. None of us cracked, though. The pressure and adrenaline of the first day had us all on good behavior. After biology, Eddie and I started using a bodyguard technique called pair guarding.
I was near guard and walked with Lissa and Christian for immediate defense. Eddie, being far guard, walked farther away and scanned the larger area for any potential threats. We followed this pattern for the rest of the day, up until the last class came around. Lissa gave Christian a quick kiss on the cheek, and I realized they were parting.
"You guys don't have the same schedule this time?"
I asked with dismay, stepping over to the side of the hall to stay out of student traffic. Eddie had already deduced that we were parting and had stopped far guard duties to come talk to us. I hadn't known how Lissa and Christian's schedules lined up for this new semester. Lissa took in my disappointed look and gave me a sympathetic smile.
"Sorry. We're going to study together after school, but right now, I've got to go to creative writing."
"And I," declared Christian loftily, "have to go to culinary science."
"Culinary science?" I cried. "You elected culinary science? That's like the most brainless class ever."
"It is not," he countered. "And even if it was, well, hey, it's my last semester, right?"
I groaned.
"Come on, Rose,"
laughed Lissa. "It's just one class period. It won't be that."
She was cut off when a commotion broke out farther down the hall. We and everyone near us stopped and stared. One of my guardian instructors, Emil, had practically appeared out of nowhere and, playing Strigoi, reached for a Moroi girl. He swung her away, pressing her to his chest and exposing her neck as though he would bite her. I couldn't see who she was, just a tangle of brown hair, but her assigned protector was Shane Reyes. The attack had caught him by surprise. It was the first one of the day, but he fumbled only a little as he kicked Emil in the side and wrestled the girl away. The two guys squared off, and everyone watched eagerly. A few even whistled and shouted, cheering Shane on. One of the catcallers was Ryan Islesworth. He was so fixated on watching the fight with Shane, wielding his practice stake, had just about won, that he didn't notice two other adult guardians sneaking up on him and Camille. Eddie and I realized it at the same time and stiffened, instinct readying both of us to spring forward.
"Stay with them," Eddie told me.
He headed toward Ryan and Camille, who had just discovered they were being set upon. Ryan didn't react as well as Shane had, particularly since he faced two attackers. One of the guardians distracted Ryan, while the other, Dimitri, I now saw, grabbed Camille. She screamed, not faking her fear. She apparently didn't find being in Dimitri's arms as thrilling as I did. Eddie headed toward them, approaching from behind, and landed a blow on the side of Dimitri's head. It hardly fazed Dimitri, but I was still amazed. I'd barely ever been able to land a hit on him in all our trainings. Eddie's attack forced Dimitri to release Camille and face this new threat. He spun around, graceful as a dancer, and advanced on Eddie. Meanwhile, Shane had staked his Strigoi and jumped in to help Eddie, moving around to Dimitri's other side. I watched, fists clenched in excitement, intrigued with the fighting in general, and with watching Dimitri in particular. It amazed me that someone so deadly could be so beautiful. I wished I was a part of the fray, but knew I had to watch the area around me in case any Strigoi attacked here. But they didn't. Shane and Eddie successfully finished off Dimitri. Part of me was a little sad at this. I wanted Dimitri to be good at everything. However, Ryan had tried to help and failed. Dimitri had technically killed him. So I felt a twisted comfort in thinking that Dimitri had still been a badass Strigoi. He and Emil praised Shane for being fast on his feet, and Eddie for realizing we had to treat this as a group endeavor rather than one-on-one trials. I got a nod for watching Eddie's back, and Ryan was chastised for not paying attention to his Moroi. Eddie and I grinned at each other, happy over getting high marks on this first test. I wouldn't have minded a slightly bigger role, but this wasn't a bad start to the field experience. We high-fived, and I saw Dimitri shake his head at us as he left.
With the drama over, our foursome split up. Lissa gave me one last smile over her shoulder and spoke to me through our bond. Have fun in culinary science. I rolled my eyes, but she and Eddie had already rounded a corner. Culinary science sounded pretty impressive, but really, it was just a fancy term for what was essentially a cooking class. Despite my teasing Christian about it being brainless, I had some respect for it. I could barely boil water, after all. Still, it was a lot different from an elective like creative writing or debate, and I had no doubts Christian was taking it as a blow-off class and not because he wanted to be a chef someday. At least I might get some satisfaction out of watching him mix a cake or something. Maybe he'd even wear an apron. There were three other novices in the class who were guarding Maroy. Since the culinary science room was large and open with lots of windows, the four of us worked together to come up with a plan to pool our efforts and secure the whole room. When I'd watched novices do their field experiences in past years, I'd only ever paid attention to the fights. I'd never noticed the teamwork and strategizing that must have been going on. Theoretically, the four of us were here to only protect our assigned Maroy. But we'd slipped into a role where we were protecting the whole class. My post was by a fire door that led outside of the school. Coincidentally, it was right by the station Christian was working at. The class normally cooked in pairs, but there was an odd number of students. Rather than work in a group of three, Christian had volunteered to be by himself. No one had seemed to mind. Many still regarded him and his family with the same prejudice that Jesse did. To my disappointment, Christian wasn't making a cake. "What is that?" I asked, watching him take out a bowl of some kind of raw, ground-up meat from the refrigerator. "Meat," he said, dumping it onto a cutting board. "I know that, you idiot. What kind?" "Ground beef." He pulled another container out and then another. "And this is veal, and this is pork." "Do you have, like, a T-Rex that you're going to feed?"
"Only if you want some. This is for meatloaf."
I stared. "With three kinds of meat?"
"Why eat something called meatloaf if you aren't actually going to get some meat out of it?"
I shook my head. "I can't believe this is only the first day with you." He glanced down, focusing on kneading his tri-meat creation together. "You sure are making a big deal out of this. Do you really hate me that much? I heard you were screaming at the top of your lungs back in the gym."
"No, I wasn't. And I don't hate you at all," I admitted.
"You're just taking it out on me because you didn't get paired with Lissa."
I didn't answer. He wasn't that far off.
"You know," he continued, "it might actually be a good idea for you to practice with someone different."
"I know. That's what Dimitri says, too."
Christian put the meat into a bowl and started adding some other ingredients.
"Then why question it? Belikov knows what he's doing. I'd trust anything he says. It sucks that they're going to lose him after we graduate, but I'd rather see him with Lissa."
"Me, too." He paused and looked up, meeting my eyes. We both smiled, amused at how shocked we were to have agreed with each other. A moment later, he returned to his work.
"You're good, too," he said, not too grudgingly, "the way you handled yourself."
He didn't finish the thought, but I knew what he was talking about. Spokane. Christian hadn't been around when I killed the Strigoi, but he'd been instrumental in helping with the escape. He and I had teamed up, using his fire magic as a means of letting me subdue our captors. We'd worked well together, all of our animosity put aside. "I guess you and I have better things to do than fight all the time," I mused. "Like worry about Victor Dashkov's trial," I realized. For a moment, I considered telling Christian what I'd learned. He'd been around the night it had all gone down with Victor last fall. But I decided not to mention the news just yet. Lissa needed to hear it first.
"Yep,"
Christian said, unaware of my thoughts.
"Brace yourself, but we aren't that different.
I mean, I'm smarter and a lot funnier, but at the end of the day, we both want to keep her safe.
He hesitated.
You know, I'm not going to take her away from you. I can't. No one can.